ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com outra explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica. Até à morte.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast, episode number 333. And next to me, Mr. 10CO10. What's going on, Cristiano Oliveira? Diz olá aos senhores e às senhoras.
Olá, senhores e senhores, e everybody else. Yeah. Escutar o podcast.
And everybody else. On the other side of the border, the good border, Dave de Oliveira, no relation. What's happening, Mr. Dave?
Nothing much. Good to be back on tonight, boys.
Very good, very good. Also, we have a special guest, and because we're on the eve, if you could say that, of a big Clásico, the biggest Clásico in Portugal. Benfica plays Porto this weekend, and we'll get into that. We have a guest here that's going to help us in discussing not only the Clásico, but also the moment. You know him from PortugueseSoccer.com. His name is John Neves.
João, pa.
John, welcome.
To call me João in Portugal, John in the North America. So, yeah, either one works fine.
Great. So, many of you guys follow PortugueseSoccer.com, very active on the Twitter sphere, if we could say that. He is somebody that keeps everybody informed, especially the ones that don't speak Portuguese. What you do is you take a lot of the articles that you pick up on the Portuguese media, and you basically translate it to English and you present it. You also do something that I think it's a great thing, and it's probably my biggest use of Portuguese soccer, which is the Capas, which is every night around 10 o'clock or so, you will publish each one of the Record, the Jogo, and the Bola Capas, and it's always good to look at that. But tell us about the project, PortugueseSoccer.com. How long has that been up? I know that Peace Soccer was also one of the parents, I guess, if you could call it, or the original. Tell us a little bit about that project, how that came about, how the idea, if you what you thought about as far as the market for it was. Just talk through what your plan has been.
Well, yeah, it's available, PortugueseSoccer.com, and you'd be surprised how many people don't know how to spell Portuguese. So it's PeaceSoccer.com to help those out that don't say Portuguese. It was a friend of mine that suggested that to me. But it started right around the time that I discovered the internet back in 1997, believe it or not.
You discovered the internet in 97, well, dude?
When I discovered the internet. And a friend of mine was telling me I had known about it. There was a lot of commercials back then, Prodigy, AOL, CompuServe, and one day I was on Yahoo, and they had this, it was called GeoCities, and it said you can create a free website. And I just remember thinking, you know, let me go see what's on the internet about Portugal. And at the time, I remember there was only three websites. There was one about a small Portuguese futsal team. There was one about the Seleção, which was done by a guy named Jason. It was very well done back then. And then there was another one, I think it was Guimarães had one of the first websites. And I just started doing it, and it grew, and the viewership grew, and people started emailing, and I basically discovered that there was an audience out there of immigrant kids like myself who basically didn't grow up in Portugal, and I did not grow up in a Portuguese community. You know, I did not grow up in the Ironbound. I didn't grow up in Fall River. I didn't grow up in Toronto, among other Portuguese that, you know, were very interested in that. So I started to do it, and it just kind of took off. And it was a website, PortugueseSoccer.com, PeaceSoccer.com, all the same thing. And then, unfortunately, I had some health issues. I stopped it for about a year or two. And then I came back. I started the website, but then I started doing the social media. And with the Twitter, with the Facebook, and I also do a thing with the Instagram, Portuguese_soccer_noticias, that I do with somebody else. So from that, that's the way it started. And it's always been about, like you said, when you were, you know, asking, there's a lot of people out there that don't know the Portuguese language, and there's a lot of people that are looking for one place to go to get all their information. And over the years, I've had newspaper guys, you know, compliment me on what I've done. I've been, you know, I credit my sources. It's all there for you to see. It's about as transparent of a website and Twitter account as you're going to have. And it's just something that's a very big passion of mine. And much like you've been doing, I think, what is it, 9 years now, the Benfica podcast?
Yeah.
You know, it's evolved and it's just something I enjoy doing.
Right. And it's obviously it's well received, and the account, I haven't checked, but I think you have quite a bit of followers. And I think that the social media platform, especially Twitter, I think it's perfect for your content, right? Because it's short blasts. There's no in-depth articles that are contained on your website. It's mostly news articles, news blasts. And I think that the social media really caters to that. So much like ourselves, you have found a niche. And I'm glad, I'm proud to say that it's a Twitter account that I follow closely. And you try to remain as biased, unbiased as possible. Have people accused you of being in one club or another?
Oh my God. I mean, how could you? It's part of our culture to ask the question of whether or not you're Benfica, Porto, or Sporting.
So you get outright asked that question?
Not as much, but a long time ago I used to. Not as much as you would think.
Do people DM you and curse you out in DMs?
Not really. The way it is with me is I did not grow up in a Portuguese neighborhood. So I did not grow up with the casas. I didn't grow up at the cafes arguing with Cristiano, Zé, Armando about the week's games. I didn't grow up in that culture. So it's not my natural instinct. You know, I'm more North American. Mm-hmm. You know, we have our controversies here, but I don't think we have, you don't see Fox after a football game arguing about the referee. You know, it's usually talking about the game, the running backs, whatever it may be. So that's my culture. You know, and I do get asked people, you know, Benfica, when the whole thing exploded with the emails, it was all over the news. You couldn't get around it. You report it, people get upset at you. Porto, people get upset at you. You know, Benfica wins number 37. Guess who that day isn't happy with you? Porto fans. You report that there's the Alcochete attacks. I'll never forget when Record was the first one to report it. And I remember saying Record, again, citing the source, there's people running around trashing Alcochete. They're going into locker rooms. All these Sporting fans getting upset. But lo and behold, it did happen. So yeah, it's a part of our culture. No one believes it. Anybody who knows me on a private level, day to day, they know I'm an Arsenal fan.
Ooh.
And you know, and as far as having a team in Portugal, the team that I've always followed from afar because I'm not there is a small team from Marcos de Valdevez called Atlético do Arcos. I do sometimes like to see Gil Vicente a little bit better because that's the closest team to Marcos de Valdevez. Braga, you can also say, is pretty close. But yes, I get asked it probably more than anything I ever done. I've come to accept it as a part of our culture, and to sit here and to argue, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Are you ever at home and you're seeing news come out and you're kind of cringing because you have to report it and you know what kind of response you're going to get from one fan base or another?
I've been doing this a very long time, as well as a few other people that have helped me in the past. And it's come, you know, it's going to come. So it's, you know, why? I'm sorry, it's in the news. It's again, the source is right there. Every tweet starts with the source, unless I'm doing my own statistics, goal scores. So if somebody's not happy with it, that's fine. But it's coming. If I don't tell you, you're eventually going to hear about it in another form. You know, it's like not a secret. So it doesn't really matter.
Let me ask you this, though. Obviously, it's well known. Well, I don't know how well it's known, but the people that are from inside know that the three newspapers, Ebola, Record and Ujogu, some people will say that each one of them is a little bit more biased to one or another. You that basically look at all of the news and how it's reported, have you ever been able to tell that one outlet, whether it's Jogo, Record or Ebola, is a little bit more biased towards one club or another?
Well, a lot of people know that Porto is more with Ojogo, but Ojogo is more of a northern-based newspaper. Mm-hmm. So that just makes a lot of sense. Record is known, as you know, more of Sporting, and Ebola is more with Benfica. So,
but have you noticed this yourself while you're reading the articles and the little capas? Have you noticed that there's a little bit of a bias towards a particular club?
Yeah, in the capas. I think you noticed.
Here's a question. Out of all your stories that you've reported over these, let's just say 20 years, with the exception of you got sick when the scooters from Pinta Costa came out. Just, you know, you got sick at that time. How inconvenient. Now, all jokes aside, what story have you reported that you have gotten the most hate from the listeners or the viewers?
That's a great question.
No, it is a very good question. I think, and I don't say it's hate, it's just a lot of people complaining that it's being reported was probably the whole thing with these emails that's been going on.
Well, but because that's probably the freshest thing in your memory.
Right. But remember, a lot of that stuff was reported by Ebola, which we kind of...
It was reported by everybody.
Right. But it's reported, but Ebola did their fair share of stuff because you have to remember something about the Portuguese newspapers. They're a business too. Their job is to get viewership. Their job is to get people to buy the digital version. And in Portugal, it's their job to get people to go up to the newspapers and spend the 110, whatever it is, to buy it. So that's their job.
And you put Benfica on a cover because it sells.
Well, I don't do the covers.
No, not you. I'm saying you. I'm saying they. You said their job is to get people to buy it. Right. Buy it. You know what I'm saying? And they put Benfica on a cover because Benfica sells.
Benfica does sell. I think it's kind of a known fact in the business world with sponsorship that people they know that Benfica kind of has one of the biggest fan bases. Porto, like I said, is very heavy toward the north. Sporting has a good fan base, but Benfica does do well. But then again, when Porto wins the championship, I think they still sell newspapers.
I was told last year by the editors of a major, major, major newspaper in Portugal. Maybe one of those three you're talking about. I don't want to say it out loud. But major newspaper. And I was told that outside of Porto, Porto doesn't really move many newspapers. That's why there's two different covers of newspapers. There's a cover that goes for the rest of the nation. And there's a cover that goes to Porto specifically. And there's a reason for that. And they say that Sporting, which to my surprise, I was like, come on, Sporting. Like, no, you'd be surprised. Sporting moves a lot more newspapers than Porto. I was surprised. Again, in the big scheme of things, right? Porto is globally more well-known than Sporting is, but still in Portugal, it's still Benfica and Sporting that move all the news. And I was, got to be brutally honest, I was surprised.
I think they have this thing in Portugal. It's called, we call it Nielsen here in North America, that does the TV ratings. There's something for the newspapers. They do show a lot of things. You know, there's a reason why Benfica is a premium channel and Sporting is an open air channel on the cables because there's more of a demand for Benfica. So, I think at the end of the day, depends on what's going on with the team. If Benfica tomorrow.
That's a good slogan to put on a t-shirt. Your channel's on free TV. Mine, you got to pay for it. You know what I mean? That's like, that'd be
there
great.
There you go. I'm going to trademark that.
Yeah, you trademark. That's a good one right there.
But. But I think that it just depends. If Sporting's having a run of good form, Sporting, they're going to have Sporting on the cover because people are happy. But you know what? If Benfica now all of a sudden, you know, the Midas touch is gone with Bruno Lage and they lose five in a row, you know, Benfica is going to be on the covers too.
I just like to tell you, Benfica, they lose five in a row after you appeared on our podcast.
I'm never coming back. Right? Time.
Just letting you know, you spit the jinx on them.
But
no volta.
I think that in Portugal, like anywhere around the world, you know, this country, North America, they love their Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys get a little bit more attention. But when the Cowboys aren't doing that well, guess what happens? They get a lot of attention. New England Patriots, when things don't go well, and you know there's been a lot of controversies, they get a lot of attention.
Let's slow down with the Patriots. Patriots have been the last 20 years. The Cowboys, you're absolutely right. The Raiders are another team. The Steelers are the other team. Patriots is a terrible example. Three examples, Steelers, Raiders, and Cowboys. Absolutely. Those are the teams of the 70s, 80s. Right. They have the
And the
most
Raiders,
attention.
Even though they haven't been so
absolutely.
Good,
the Raiders always get that attention. Pretty good. Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, I think in Portugal, I think it's been said, not coming from me, Benfica definitely has a huge fan base. There's no doubt about it. But I think also at certain times of the year, depending on when the teams are doing very well, you know, Sporting will also share their fair share of newspapers. Porto will also share. It's just the way, you know, Porto, you know, obviously they just got eliminated from the Champions League and they had 38,000 this past Saturday night for a game. That's well below their average. And usually they do in the 40s. So, you know, if Porto starts, all of a sudden starts not doing so well, they're going to see their business go down a little bit. And so it all depends on how teams are doing. You know, at the end of the day, whatever's on the newspaper cover, there's a thing in news called cycle, the news cycle. Today, the news cycle is Bas Dost. Today, the news cycle is Cristiano Ronaldo gave an interview and he talked about a lot of things about how his kid went to see his house in Madeira and he couldn't believe
it. Madeira, in Lisbon.
No, he took his son.
Lisbon.
All right, well, there's a story about Cristiano. Thank you.
Me?
But not you,
unfortunately. Oh, I thought you were going to spread rumors.
Sorry about Cristiano Oliver.
But today, that's the story. Tomorrow, you're going to wake up depending on the Copas, and there'll be a brand new story. So in Portugal, that's it's no different than the rest of the world. It just depends on what's the big story of the day.
Yeah.
And tomorrow it could be, you know, it could be a Benfica injury. Benfica could sign another goalkeeper. That becomes a story. That's just the way it is in the Portuguese press. That's the way PortugueseSoccer.com responds. It's no different than, you know, Correio de Minha likes to get ahead of a situation, and they're going to report the hell out of it. It's no different.
So I asked you a question regarding negativity. Let's flip the coin to the other side, and I'll ask you a positive question. And it's not even a question. I'm going to make a statement, and I think you're going to agree with me. Is it safe to say that the story that you've reported on the most, that has given you the most satisfaction and the most satisfaction.
Oh, I can tell you
what that is. Euro 2016.
Yes, that was special. That was very special. The national team, when they're making a good run, and this our generation, the last 25 years, we've been a part of, you know, we went to the semifinals of the World Cup.
We've made it to the most semifinals of any other country, right, of the major tournaments.
Aside from Germany. Yeah, because that's the fun part when you see everybody. When you see everybody kind of get behind, and it's not about the blue, the red, or the green. It's about the Seleção and getting behind Fernando Santos. And that's the fun part of it when you report that. And I think because of Portugal's success and because of how much we appreciate Portugal, I think it's also, there's a lot of other fans that aren't Portuguese that follow the account and obviously, you know, follow Portuguese other accounts, not just mine. So Portugal's become ESPN here in America. How many times have Portugal been here in ESPN? I have a feeling when Cristiano Ronaldo retires, we won't be seeing Portugal so much. But Portugal's got a good brand name.
There's João Félix.
Well, if he becomes a superstar, then maybe we'll get that run. Yeah. But right now,
Doesn't matter who becomes a superstar. I think if Portugal keeps playing, and this is not a Portuguese national team podcast, and we're going to switch the topic real quick to Benfica. I know every one of you at home right now can't wait for my thoughts on Benfica. So just hold on a second. Hang tight. We'll get to that.
Chris, I can't wait for your thoughts on Benfica.
But I think as long as the Portuguese national team keeps doing well, I think they're going to be on TV, because it doesn't matter who's on their team. They're going to be one of those must-watch TV teams that has to be on TV at all times. So
I don't know if this adds anything to the conversation, but I know a lot of people...
Saved a bunch of money by saving a Geico?
No, a lot of people, what they do is they use the newspapers for the dog wee-wee pads. Oh. Maybe that's the reason why they sell a lot of Porto papers in Lisbon. I don't know. Anyway. I just wanted
you could always count on Alfredo to come up with one a week that's like, yeah, you laugh or you cry. I don't know. Right now I'm in between. I'm undecided.
But let me also say, you know, just for you guys, wanted to take this time to congratulate you guys, because what is it, 9 years now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you guys when you started your first podcast this year. I heard it. So I just want to congratulate you guys.
Thank you. You heard the one.
It really is an accomplishment as long as you've been doing. There's obviously, we know there's a ton of Benfica podcasts out there. And
now there are.
Yeah, you guys are the, you know, Mount Rushmore of Benfica podcasts. So absolutely. Credit to you guys.
Absolutely. No, look, and all credit go to the people that have spent the time and effort and put forth their passion to talk about Benfica in terms of podcast. We love them all. And because we know how much work it takes, mm-hmm. and how much dedication, how much passion it takes. So obviously, everybody needs to be congratulated. But for sure, we were the originals before anyone was thinking about Benfica podcasts. We were already on.
You hear that, Chris? They were already big before you came on.
They were the original. I'm the original Cristiano. This is the podcast for all originals around the world. Tune in. All the originals will be present.
All right, let's get back into our editorial line that we usually follow. So, real quick, if you guys are avid listeners of the podcast, you already know how it goes. We're gonna recap the Belenenses game. We're gonna look ahead to the big game this weekend against Porto, and we got a couple of news items that we could discuss also. So let's get right into this Belenenses game. I'll give you the lineup: Vlaco Dimos in goal, Tavares, Dias, Ferro and Grimaldo, Samaris and Florentino, Pizzi, Rafa on the wings, RDT and Seferovic up front. A game at the Jamor, and I got to be honest, I know that the Jamor isn't always used, and I'm so used, and I'm from the time where we used to see the Jamor in the final of the Portuguese Cup, and that that grass and that field was impeccable. Now that the Bulnenses are now playing their home games, I don't know who else is playing there. It can't be that Bulnenses trashing the field that much. I know at one point in last season, that field looked like a campo de batatas.
In a rainy game, I remember that was muddy. It was absolutely atrocious. I can't believe that a professional team in right now with Portuguese coefficient, they're sixth in Europe, and it's a team in first division playing in such conditions. I think it's atrocious. I think it's a bad job by the club. I think it's a bad job by the league to allow something like that to go on week in, week out. And I think someone
Summer. Wait until we start getting more rain in Portugal.
It's terrible. I mean, it was as ugly as it could get.
Yeah.
And I mean, I shouldn't say as it could get, because it got a lot ugly last year. I think it was, I don't know if it was Bulnenses Setúbal. It was a game.
No, it was
muddy.
Awful.
It was atrocious.
It was. They had to take a break from playing there so the field could get back in shape. But yeah.
But
so,
that's what you get. I mean, they kind of made their own bed.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Lages did mention the conditions of the field. But look, the conditions are bad for both teams, even though Benfica likes to play in those good surfaces, quick surfaces. It definitely affects Benfica more, especially when you're on attack and you're dominating. But, you know, I thought that it was a decent half by Benfica. There was some chances that were created, some chances that were wasted. Vlaco Dimos comes up big at the end of the half to shut down a breakaway. Huge.
Tremendous stuff.
If they score that goal before the end of the half, I think we're talking about a totally different second half. In the second half, Benfica came out a lot stronger, and we were able to get on a scoreboard. Credit to Rafa, man. Rafa has been on fire.
Look, Rafa is a phenomenal player, but let's get back into the first half. Benfica, and again, some of you will say I'm always critical, but Benfica has gotten tremendous results here to start the season. And obviously, at the end of the day, what matters most is the results. But Benfica hasn't particularly played well. And this is another game. Benfica didn't play that well.
No.
They missed a tremendous amount of opportunities in front of goal. And look, we should expect the finishing not to be what we saw last year. Last year, you had, at least for the second half, the first half, you know, Sferovic was on fire. But the second half, you add in João Felix. You lose Jonas as well. These are the types of players that they get one chance and they finish it. So, you know, it's not going to be to the same efficiency as we saw last year because the caliber of players is not there. But these opportunities that Sferovic and Raul de Tomás are, you know, shanking this early in the season, it's something to worry about. I said on Twitter, you know, I hope that Sferovic did not revert to last August Sferovic, which is a guy that none of us wanted to see on the field at the time.
Absolutely.
And so it's a little bit worrisome. I haven't been too ecstatic with the decision by Bruno Lage to play Samaris alongside Florentino. I think I've been vocal about it here, Alfred, on a podcast that both of them shouldn't be playing side by side. I think Benfica needs a much more offensive presence alongside one of those guys, whether it be Tarap. I know there's still a tremendous amount of hate for Tarap, but at the end of the day, I think we're all pulling for the same side. And I think anyone that's sending out all this hate to Tarap, they should be ashamed of themselves because he's wearing a Benfica shirt. And I want everyone in a Benfica shirt to succeed. Whether it be Chiquinho, who has come into these last two games and has done really well himself, and Bruno Lage, at the end of the game, even went out and praised the guy, called him a crack. He's a crack. Un gajo, un crack. Un crack. He said it multiple times. And Benfica has other alternatives. As I mentioned last week, Alfredo, it doesn't necessarily even have to beat that after Chiquinho. You could pull Pizzi into the middle, who's played there for many times, many years at Benfica, and bring another wing. I mean, there's just so many other things that Bruno Lage could do. And I know right now he's getting the results. And the guy, everything he says, he's got that Midas touch. Everything he touches turns into gold. But there's something there that I think, you know, if Benfica wasn't getting the results, he'd be getting some criticism because it seems like there's things that he could have done over the last at least three games to change things. I know the results have been fantastic. At the end of the day, it's about the result, the final result. But you can't tell me you're here pleased with the way Benfica has played these first three games.
Yeah, look, they've had these things. I think their best game of the season was definitely the Super Cup. Since then, they've played
second half.
I think they've played okay. The five-nil result against Paso Ferreira, I thought there was a misleading scoreline. This game, and look, the teams are going to come at Benfica, and by now they already know how Benfica functions, who's touching the ball, where the transition is happening. And something that Bulnish did quite well was to make sure that they mark the two pivots, both Samaris and Florentino, to force Benfica now to play the long ball. And oftentimes we saw the ball go from defense into the final third without touching the midfield guys. And when Benfica's midfield doesn't touch the ball, they suffer in result of having some kind of a flow of game. So, look, all credit to Bulnes. I thought that Bulnes set up very well. I thought they had a couple chances that they could have put away, but they didn't. But yeah, this was a team that played us very hard.
Silas has been impressive. If they play the way they played against Benfica, against most of the other competition league, they'll do well.
The problem is that they won't.
That's the thing, is will the intensity drop?
Well, that motivation also.
Motivation, intensity. If they play the same way, look, they did a tremendous job of keeping the ball away from everybody. They touched the ball. They played out the back. This wasn't a team that was just put the pepa frente and let's hope for the best and defend with all 11 men. They did a good job of moving it around. And so if they play like this, they're going to have a successful season for them. It just, as you mentioned, the motivation, the intensity.
Yeah.
You know, is it gonna wind down playing against other competition?
Dave, let me have you talk for a little bit. I know that you've been silent since you said hello. Ciao. But here's what I'll ask you. I know that you personally have a Seferovic shirt, and this is something that's been a topic now, right? There's people already growing a little bit impatient, as it's natural from Portuguese and it's customary from Portuguese people, about the RDT and Seferovic combination. What are your thoughts on that combination? And especially with Seferovic being so wasteful.
But yeah, I think we all need to make a relax for a bit. Let those two still build some chemistry together and let them figure it out. I know everybody wants to put Shaqingo up there with RDT because they've seen what he's done in small sample sizes, but I still think he's going to be most effective in that midfield role with Florentino. If he's got a role on this position and on this team, I'd rather have him there with Florentino instead of having him up top with RDT. I do have that soft spot for Seferovic. I know that he's going to miss three chances, but he's still going to bang in that fourth chance that he gets. So I'm still holding out hope. I hope Bruno Lage keeps them up there with RDT for a bit and let them build the chemistry. But I think people on Twitter need to make a relax between calling it quits already between RDT and Seferovic.
I actually think that the combination or the partnership of Seferovic and Raul Tomas, I don't think they play bad. I think where they've been really bad is at the finishing, but I think that they created chances. Raul Tomas, you guys kept asking me on the podcast, what do I think about it? And I said, I haven't seen enough. He's growing on me. I think
he is growing on you.
He has the ability to play as that second striker role. I think he does well to come back and get the ball, and he plays it, you know, off to the open man. He's created a couple opportunities. I think he's pressing a little bit. He's trying to get his first goal. So you might see him take a shot that you otherwise wouldn't have liked him to see, but this is a guy that's accustomed to being the lone striker. So he's going to take shots every time he gets the ball. But I think that both of them have played well together. I just think that they haven't put the ball in the back of the net, so it looks bad. If Seferovic finishes one of those opportunities, just one of those opportunities this past week, and I was going to get to RDT, and RDT finishes one, you're both saying, oh, both of our strikers scored a goal. They look phenomenal. I think they played well. They just haven't played well when it matters most, which is in the finishing department.
Yeah, John, what's your take from an outsider's perspective? What's your take on this partnership and how do you see it?
With PZ and
Seferovic and RDT.
We'll get to that one next.
Well, I like I said, I agree with you. He was wasteful, Seferovic. To me, you know, Raul de Tomas, I still think the jury's out on him. I know he did good in the preseason, but scoring goals against an amateur team from California is not really a big thing. But I know you guys spent a lot of money on him. I know Chris wasn't happy with the amount of money you spent. I think it had something to do with Real Madrid, past relationship. But I think right now what's carrying you guys is PZ Rafa. They've been involved in 6 of the 8 goals. Yeah. And during the course of a season, people are going to go into a slump. And you're going to need those two guys up top. You know, Seferovic came out of the blue last year. No one really expected him. He was kind of in Rui Victoria's doorhouse. He didn't play. And all of a sudden, he just explodes. And, you know, we saw what happened. So I think right now that's not your strongest area. I think right now, PT and Rafa are really leading your team. And PT, by the way, just like last year, if you remember, he started off hot. And then you got to October, he got called up to the national team. He got a little bit tired, and then he kind of like petered off, and then other guys had to step in and pick it up. So right now, I'm not really sold on them. I think there's still a lot more. And to be honest with you, going into this weekend's Clásico, I think it's obvious that Conceição, I think they've talked about really putting the defense a little bit stronger this weekend, going into the Luge. They're not going to park the bus, of course. But I think if you guys are going to do anything this weekend, it's got to be Seferovic or, you know, Raul de Tomás.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I think, look, Benfica has really missed Gabriel in the midfield. I know I went off before talking about Samaris and Florentino playing side by side, but you put Gabriel there, all of a sudden, it's a total. And I know he's not that offensive player that's going to score goals, but he's got the pass. He's got the vision. He controls the whole midfield, allows PZ and Rafa, which have been tremendous. That tandem right there has been tremendous to start the season. Allows those guys to be a little bit more offensive. Think about it, to be more offensive than what they've been so far, which is just mind boggling. So I hope there was a small chance that he would be back for this Porto game. I haven't heard anything.
Ooh, Gabriel?
Yes. It was 3 to 4 weeks.
I think they said, three to four weeks.
It looks like he's not going to be called up. It looks like he's not going to be ready, but it would be a tremendous boost to this team. Even to have him off the bench to come in the game if Benfica, let's say, is winning 1-0, control the game, kind of not have Benfica sit back and defend so much. So I just think that people don't realize how big of a player he is, how important of a player he is for Benfica. As far as PZ and Rafa, I mean, Alfredo, how long have I said it here? Yeah. Man, you can't teach speed. And Rafa, when he's on his game, he's unstoppable, at least in the Portuguese
unplayable.
League. He's unstoppable. You can't do nothing about it to stop unless you foul him and get yellow cards and whatever. The guy's absolutely lights out. And the crazy part about it is that ever since he arrived at Benfica, he was the same exact player. He created the chance after chance. Difference is that now he's finishing him. Before he get in front of the goal, Pernaberta.
Or even the final pass was poor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Final ball, but really what's putting him over the top is the goal.
Now, I wanted to comment on something that Laj said. A couple of things that Laj said. He was asked about Benfica's defensive efforts in these first three games of the season, three games and a clean sheet. And Dave, I'll let you go with some stats in a little bit. But what I wanted to say is that he was asked about that. And the curious thing that he said was that the reason why Benfica hasn't allowed any goals is because of the work that the two forwards have done. So he's obviously happy about what's going on from a defensive standpoint, the amount of space that they cover, the spaces that they open, the lanes that they create for guys like Rafa and Pizzi, because obviously if those guys can't be pulling defenses apart, Rafa doesn't have that room to get in there. So we can't be short-sighted and think that, you know, they don't score goals, it's not working. You got to look at the whole package, and it's a bit unfair. I know that forwards are judged by the goals that they score. To me, my theory on RDT is that until he scores the first goal for Benfica, he seems very nervous, very anxious, forcing his shots. He just wants to get something on net, and it's not coming for him. But I think that once he gets that first one in and get past that, I think that he's going to have a much better time at Benfica. Seferovic is the Seferovic that we know. He's wasteful. Last year, he had João Félix to put away some of the chances that he missed or that he created. He put away some chances also, but he's always been very wasteful. He's not that that assassin in front of goal.
Didn't Dave do a study on his research study, Duke University, of how he scored like what, the 30% or 3% of his shot? What was it, Dave? Like the guy?
It was around 30% of his shots, and he missed another 30% of his opportunity, or he was more than 30% there.
It's the most opportunities in all of Portuguese football last year, correct?
And he was still the top scorer. Now imagine if he had bagged them. With no penalty. Imagine if he had bagged them. Another thing that I wanted to talk about, and a couple more things, and then we'll wrap up the game, was, as Cristiano already mentioned, that Laj mentioned that Chiquinho was a crack. Right. So he praised them, and he doesn't really go on a tangent praising particular guys. He always has a little bit of a message, but not as effusive as he was about Chiquinho. Let me ask you this, Cristiano. You think it's only a matter? Is it only a matter of time until Chiquinho breaks into the starting 11?
No, absolutely not. I don't see it. Where would you put him right now? I mean, asking me the question, think about it for a second. Where would
you could
expect,
play as a,
you
as
expect
a,
Gabriel to come back, and hopefully he does. He comes back healthy, right? So it's going to be Florentino and Gabriel, and, right? You're going to have Pizzi on the outside, right? You're going to have Rafa on the outside. They're going to flip-flop whenever the hell they want to. Then you're going to have Seferovic. The only way you're going to do is if you drop Seferovic or Raul Tomás. I don't see Benfica dropping Raul Tomás anytime soon. Seferovic might get dropped, but I just don't see how they're going to drop a guy who led the league in goals last year. I don't think they're just going to turn their back on him instantly. Is he going to get into a game? Will he probably come in, get subbed in a lot earlier? Most likely, but I just don't see where he's going to become a regular.
But if you follow Lage's rationale, he usually likes to go with the hot hand. So whatever guys are training well, are playing well, he likes to go. And I think that Chiquinho is really making a chance for himself to start.
Against Fedovic, right? He's there to put the ball in the back of the net. And I know he's not doing a good job of that, but at least he's still getting into the chance. He's still getting into position. So that might be a positive. Same thing with Raul de Tomás. I think he's getting a lot more involved than I expected him to do. I think he's becoming more, I don't want to call him a playmaker, but he has that, at least he looks like he could come back, get the ball, turn his back to the goal, and still get other people involved, which I think he's done well in doing that. Now, the one thing that you can't ever knock Seferovic for doing is he'll always put in the shift. He's going to press as hard as anybody out there on the field, and that's what Bruno Lage likes to do, is that high press. And who better to do it than a 6'4 monster runs around as fast and as big as anybody on the team, doing exactly that, putting that amount of pressure on the opposition's defenders, which is going to tire him out along, you know, eventually he's going to tire these guys out. So I just, look, he might switch things for games to give him a breather, but I don't see where, and I like Chiquinho, but I don't see just right now as we speak without injuries, I don't see which one of those guys he's going to take out to put in a guy like Chiquinho.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that Rui Costa said this recently, and Bruno Lage keeps echoing it, that they want more competitions at every position. So if you don't see these two guys up front, you know, putting in the goals, you know, Chiquinho will get an opportunity.
I disagree, guys. I disagree.
I disagree with the two.
You didn't spend $20 million.
It's way too early. I think it's way too early.
You didn't spend $20 million to bench the guy. You're not gonna bench him. You're gonna give this guy as much rope as he's gonna to hang him. It's like, bro, you're either gonna do it or he's gonna play. Now, will he get a game off? Yeah, but you're not gonna see an extended period of time on the bench. And Seferovic, again, this is a guy who puts in the shift, presses with the high press that we like to see Bruno Lage, come out with. And the guy led the league in goals last year. Now, am I a fan? Would I like someone more technically gifted? Would I like someone who's a better finisher than Seferovic that could do the same things he does? Absolutely. We just don't have that guy.
Yeah, I think that even now reading and interpreting the message from Lage saying that Chiquinho is a crack, is probably a motivation message too, that, look, you haven't started, you come off the bench, you put in good efforts, the difference has been noted, you're not ready to start, but just so you know, my opinion of you is that you're a crack. So I think that there's an internal message there, perhaps towards Chiquinho, to praise him and to still keep his motivation up. But Formulage says every guy works like they want to start. Nobody is really has gotten into that funk of, well, I know I'm not going to start, so I'm not going to work as hard. But that's the tone that he's kind of set. If you don't work hard, you don't belong in this team. And if you work hard, you're going to get a chance eventually. So, you know, it is what it is. Last this, and then I'll let Dave put up some stats, and we'll put a stone on this. Seferovic and RDT, 15 goals for the season. Over or under on Seferovic?
Over.
Individual.
Over.
And what about RDT?
Over.
You wanna take a shot, João?
So I would say Seferovic over, Raul under.
Bruno? Tira os headphones.
Set that over.
Sefero over. It's both over.
The only way that doesn't happen is if you get injured and they're out for a prolonged period of time.
We're going to listen to this. We're going to listen to this at the end of the season.
Yeah, but if a guy breaks his leg and he's out for 3 months.
No importa. Dave, Seferovic, individual, over or under 15 goals for the season. On all competitions, let's just say that.
Oh, all competitions, 15. I'm going to go under. And RDT, I'll go over. And we're not forgetting, or I think we're forgetting that we also have $17 million on the bench with the Vinicius too. Just for those two guys. But I think he's going to play a role later on in this season too. So that's, I think he, if anyone's going to take time away from Seferovic, I think it might be him more than Shikingu up top there.
Right. All right, fair enough. Dave, you want to give us some stats so we could close this topic out?
For sure. So like you had mentioned, Benfica's third straight game with a clean sheet to open up the season. That's only their ninth time in team history where they've opened the first three games with a clean sheet. If they do it on Saturday against Porto, that'll be a club record that they've tied. So we've been clamoring on this podcast last year for better defense, and they've opened up the season with three straight clean sheets this year.
Yeah, and when your best scorer is Pizzi with three goals, that's that speaks a lot about the whole topic of these two forwards, whether they're working out or whether they've been too wasteful. So that speaks volumes of it. But anyway, a good win.
Same thing happened last season, though, if you recall, a lot of goals from defenders and midfielders to start off the season, and then once the winter months came and there was a switch up top with the manager, then the striker started finishing away and collecting their goals.
Yeah, absolutely. So a very good win for Benfica, especially before they play Porto. And after Porto, let's not forget, they got a tough game at the Pedreira against Braga, who even though they lost against Sporting, that was a good showing. I watched that game. So two difficult games, and it was important to be able to get this game and these 3 points under our belt, especially because everybody was clamoring how Belenenses was the only team that took points away from Brunelage last season. So we were able to get the 3 points, albeit some VAR involved in that. And we usually don't talk about refereeing, so we're going to pass that.
We leave that for John and his newspaper clip.
We only talk about the grass.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's turn our attention now to the big game, the Clásico, that happens this this weekend, Saturday, 7 p.m. local. Benfica will host Porto at Estádio da Luz. Dave, want to run through some stats?
Yeah, for sure. In 241 official games, we've won 88, drawn 60, and lost 93. All time at home at the Estádio da Luz, 68 wins, 31 draws, and 22 losses. Last 10, 2 wins, 4 draws, 4 losses. And, of course, those 2 wins came last season under Bruno Lage once he took over because, actually, Rui Vitória did pick up his first win against Porto earlier in the season. But Bruno Lage did win in Porto later on that season, last season.
Absolutely. I think that I saw something on 0-0 that said that if Benfica beats Porto three times in a row, and this is not counting the Taça da Liga game, the fiasco that we had in the Taça da Liga game last season.
Just in a regular season, right?
It would be the first time that Benfica has beaten Porto three consecutive times since 1972. That's my birth year. So 47 years ago. That was 47 years. I'm not 47 yet, but I will be this later on this year. But 47 years ago was the last time Benfica beat Porto three consecutive times in domestic competitions. So we'll be looking for that. But Dave,
tem juiz, pá, 50 anos e ainda está aqui a brincar a fazer podcast, pá. Filha, pá.
But Dave, did you finish? Sorry, we didn't mean to interrupt you. Were you done with the stats?
And they've opened up the season with 2 wins and 2 losses, and those losses were crucial against Gil Vicente, first game of the season, and Krasnodar, which eliminated them from any Champions League potential this season.
Yeah, but that was all intentional. They wanted to play in the Europa League because, you know, they missed it.
They like Thursday Night Football.
Yeah, they like Thursday Night Football. They missed
it. And they host the Super Cup next year, the UEFA Super Cup. So they want to win Europa League.
They host the Super Cup?
Yeah, that's true.
I thought the Super Cup was always hosted in Monaco.
No, no, but then they took it away a few years ago.
That was back in 1972, bro. Time.
So anyway, quite a game here. And Clásicos are always big games. And John, I guess I'll go to you first. Considering the spell that Porto has had, and they claim that with the win against Setúbal, they kind of righted that ship. But how do you look at this Porto this season? They lost quite a few important players, a lot of them on a free. And they really haven't brought in good quality replacements. Obviously, there's some financial issues. They don't have the cash to spend. But how do you see this Porto this early in the season? What's your idea of them?
Well, I would say that some of the players they brought in, I mean, I think their goalkeeper, Marchesin, is very good. I'm not a fan of Nakajima. I don't think he's going to play this weekend. I think he's in Japan with his baby. Zé Luís, who had the hat trick, looks like he could be something that can really thrive in this league. But, you know, Porto, I think right now you have to say, when you think about them under their Sergio Conceição area, this might be their weakest spell so far. You know, giving up 3 goals at home is, especially to a team from Russia that we're competing against for the UEFA coefficient to get back to Champions League, is not so good. So if you're a Benfica fan, despite what happened with Setúbal, and again, I, you know, they're playing at home on a Saturday night, or, you know, as late as the game was, you know, I think you have to look at more what they did with Krasnodar, not so much with Setúbal, to really get the feel of what this true team is. So I think if you're Benfica, you have to be happy. You're kind of getting them in here injured. You win, you go up 6 points. And what you guys went through with Rui Vitória in December and January, now Porto's going through with that right now because people are starting to think that Sergio Conceição. But you also have to be careful, because if you draw and Porto and Sporting wins, you wind up tied with them. And despite all the problems that Sporting have, and then if Porto somehow comes in to lose and wins, then all of a sudden Porto, you know, going from everybody being concerned about them, all of a sudden now they're back to being a very good team and everyone's happy again. And meanwhile, you guys, you know, all of a sudden people in the press, the coppers will be, oh, he lost the Midas touch. So this weekend early in the season, I think it's very important that if Benfica wins, 6-point advantage, huge. Luis Felipe Vieira will be all over the newspapers talking about what a great club everyone has been.
How many cases is he going to be opening up after that result?
Oh, he'll have plenty of opportunity. People will be begging him to open more cases. But I think at the same time, you know, it's even though it's early, it's only week 3. Regardless of what happens this weekend, you know, we still have 31 weeks ahead of us. And as we saw last year with the way Benfica came back from, was it a 7-point deficit, that obviously it's, you know, it's possible to be down that much or come back. And we've seen that before with teams. I think Rui Vitória first year, you guys were down, I think, 8 points and you came back. But I think it's all about psychology this weekend. You guys win and you have a chance to go up 6 points after 3 weeks.
I think that's big. Don't forget the 6 points, and also the fact that we won at Stade Luz will be up on a head-to-head if that comes together. Of course, we don't know what the result at the Dragão will be, but Benfica will hold that advantage of having beaten Porto at Stade Luz. And 6 points, look, I know it's early in the season, but 6 points is a tremendous advantage, not only from a point standpoint, but also from a mental standpoint. Because as you mentioned, Sergio Conceição has already been criticized by the fans because he didn't make Europe. They gave away those 40 million that the Champions League usually brings you. But there's also some doubts as to what he's done with this team. Some questionable choices, guys starting that have never played. And he's been a little bit, touchy-feely in the press conferences also.
Well, this Futebol Clube do Porto is something that I'm not accustomed to seeing, not at least since I can remember football. They lost some key players, and they go out and reinforce themselves with 31-year-old goalkeeper, 28-year-old Zé Luís, 28-year-old Uribe, 26-year-old Saraiva. I'm just not accustomed to them. Nakajima's 24, but he hasn't played yet. I'm just not accustomed to them going out and strengthening themselves with old players. Porto is more of team that, you know, develops. We've seen like what Benfica has done. Porto has done a tremendous, whether you like them or not, you know, everybody knows I can't stand them. They've done a tremendous job developing players, bringing in players, developing them, winning, and then selling them off for high prices. I don't think they're going to do that with any of these guys that they have now. And a lot of that shows you the type of pressure that I think that they're under, that they don't have the time to go buy the 20-year-old that they're accustomed to buying and giving them time to develop because they can't afford to fall behind Benfica much further. So I think they try to go for a much more finished product, maybe not the higher caliber, you know, a player that's going to reach that ceiling that these other youngsters are going to get, but they'd be ready to play today. And from what we've seen, I mean, terrible results. I mean, you take away the game against Vitória Setúbal.
Missing out again on the Champions League is huge. But it's been
terrible results, exactly. So, look, as a Benfica, I'm ecstatic for it. So I hope that they come in with this, with all sorts of pressure to try to lose on Saturday, which I do think that all the pressure in this game is going to be on the Futebol Clube do Porto side because they can't fall behind 6 points early in the season, as they will if they lose that game. So I think Benfica is playing with house money. I think, you know, obviously Benfica under Bruno Lage and a Benfica that you and I always talk about. Benfica should always come out to win every single game regardless of who they play, right? And I think Benfica will come out with that attitude and that mindset. And I'm 100% convinced that Bruno Lage will come out with that mindset. I think Benfica will handle this game. I mean, even if Benfica, I don't even want to say Benfica's, I think they're going to win this game. I think Benfica's.
You feel confident?
Absolutely. I think I think Benfica come Christmas time, Benfica has the title wrapped up.
Come Christmas time,
if not early.
But Sporting is usually the Christmas champion.
Come on, bro, seriously. Sporting is the pior com Porto, pa.
But anyway, I thought that this season they gotta have to dig deep because not only did they miss out on the 40 million of the Champions League, but they also lost Herrera, Brahimi
for free,
for Philippe for free. That's huge.
Philippe wasn't free.
Philippe was not.
Oliver Torres left.
But they missed out on that money, man. That's a lot of money that they could have used to buy players. So
that's why they went out and bought 28-year-olds for $8 million, and you know, because they can't afford those types of guys, and they can't afford to go buy a 20-year-old, hope that he develops, and then miss on second place again next year. I think we, if you saw the, if you didn't enjoy and you saw the shenanigans last year with the VAR, this year is going to be triple that.
Yeah, Dave, what are your feelings on this game, dude?
It's probably the most confident we've ever been going into a Clásico against a Futebol Clube do Porto. I know every coach has a shelf life, and I think even with Conceição, his style, the way he attacks and he goes after his players and tries to get that little extra out of his players, I think that even has a shorter shelf life compared to other coaches. So he might be on the hot seat right now. It could work. We did see that it did work a couple of years ago with a team that was more ready to become champions, and was just that little finishing piece for them to become champions. But with a team that's in a rebuild, I don't know if that's the type of coach that you want to be in charge of the squad. Especially with some turbulence already with the two losses to open up the season. I hope we put a 5-0 spanking on them. They want to talk about 5-0. Let's put a 5-0 win at the Estádio da Luz this Saturday here.
Well, I'll go out and say this. When Benfica beats Porto at the Estádio da Luz this weekend, Sérgio Conceição will be on the very, very hot seat.
Let me ask you this, Cristiano. You've already mentioned that Porto comes into this game with lots of pressure, right? Having to win the game.
Having to.
How do you see this approach of them having to win the game? So typically, in Estádio da Luz, in normal conditions, they're probably playing a style that's a little bit more conservative, where they don't want to expose themselves. How do you see that? Porto coming into Estádio da Luz, a team that needs to win this game, how do you think that's going to play into Benfica's style?
Well, we've seen Benfica, they love to pressure high, as we talked about earlier. they're going to have to open themselves up more. They're going to have to come forward a lot more, which is going to give Benfica the opportunity to press, and it's going to be the opportunity when they get the ball to counter. And we've seen if Seferovic, as we talked about, if he's able to put the ball in the back of the net, Raul Tomás might have a field day. I think it fits right. It falls right into Benfica's plans. I think Benfica is a totally different team when they play on the counter, because Benfica has the ability to have the playmakers to make plays and to finalize and to create beautiful football. So if they open themselves up and they come forward, which they will have to, I think Benfica is going to love it.
What's your over under on fouls on we're playing over under, by the way. This is the episode for over under on fouls on Rojava. What's your over under? Because there was a graphic on either Recordo or Ebola that showed how many times he was fouled by Belenenses players this past weekend.
How many times was he fouled?
I think it was six or seven, if I'm not
that
mistaken.
Was six or, I say eight.
Eight times?
Eight times over, but I say it's
eight. Over eight. Or over seven.
Over seven. Well, eight. I think eight. Eight is the line.
Dave, the hottest player right now for Benfica, the guy that's making it all happen, the playmaker, the difference maker. How many fouls do you think, over or under, Rafa will suffer at the hands of
Porto? Well, you got to come out with a number. You can't get it.
Well, Dave, let's say seven. Over or under?
Over. It's going to be an aggressive game from Porto's side of things. They want to stop the ball and stop that free-flowing game that Benfica is used to playing. So high amount of fouls this Saturday here.
What's how many yellow cards do you think Pep will finish the game?
Put money on a red card to be dished out. I'll tell you that much. He'll be a rich man.
To the Benfica players.
It'll still pay.
Yeah. John.
Over under, John.
What do you think, seven, man? You think that what are some of the things that Porto needs to do in order to stop this Benfica?
Well, Benfica hasn't given up a goal all season, so I think Porto's going to try to go in and score early, kind of set the tone and put Benfica on the offensive to get back into it. I think my biggest thing right now is, like I said, you guys got two hot players with Pizzi and Rafa. And in order for you to win, you really need Seferovic or Raul de Tomas to really come out and be there, what they've been expected to be, especially Raul de Tomas. Porto, I think, like I said, even though they come in, and I'm sure Conceição in the locker room is going to say everything about everybody's against us, everybody in the stadium wants us to lose, they hate you, they hate your mother, we got to come in here, we got to win, and we got to score right away. And I think that's what's going to happen. I'm not predicting a 2-2 game, because I really believe at the end of the day, Porto will score.
2-2 game.
I'm predicting 2-2.
Benfica hasn't allowed a goal all season, but you're saying that they will allow two goals.
Well, if we were sitting here talking about Setúbal or Tondela, I would say Benfica is going to win 3-4-0. But you know, we are playing what I think is still the second best team in the league. But I think Porto, I think it's going to be a good game. But
best, like I said, the second best team in the league, Benfica or Porto?
Well, right now it's Porto. Right now it's Porto.
I just want to clear that up.
But just remember, if we draw and Sporting wins, for all the problems that Sporting's having right now, Sporting's going to be tied with you guys.
I'm not worried about Sporting. Sporting é Zão do Mijo. Sabes o que é Zão do Mijo?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. It's an early season game. I remember a few years ago, they had a rule that you couldn't do any of these big games in like the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, they did change that.
But it's nice that they have this game, I guess, before the first international break. But I would have liked to have seen this game maybe in week 10, week 11, when things really start to take shape. But it's going to be a great game, and I hope a lot of people watch it. I think it's a BTV game.
Last year, Benfica played Sporting at the same weekend.
They did, 1-1.
João Félix scored his first goal for Benfica.
Yeah, Nani scored.
And now, penalty. And now, this year, they play Porto. How was that game? Last year. Not this game. It didn't happen yet. How was that game?
That's great, man.
That was a great game. Well, that they scored.
No, I'm happy for you.
Good, thanks, man. I knew you would be. That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah, plus you went to a Benfica game and they tied. So what does that say about you?
They didn't lose.
Okay. Could've they didn't worse. Win.
They didn't lose. And they won the Campeonato, so it was all worth it.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's going to be a very interesting game. I am confident that Benfica could pull out the result, especially because of the way they've played and because of how the team is showing themselves. Yes, they haven't hit full stride, but there's a lot of organization there and the positioning. I just think that some things need to click. Forwards need to start scoring goals. But I think that Benfica right now is is definitely at a better place than Porto. But as we know, form doesn't always matter as we head into the Clásicos, as we head into the derbies. But it'll be an interesting game, and it'll be a chance for Benfica to expose Porto on whether or not they're a weak team this year or not. Because I think that if Porto wins this, they will galvanize themselves, and I think they will pick up a little bit of momentum going into the international break, which happens in the middle of September.
Middle of September?
I think it's like second week of September.
First week of September, right?
No, they still have Braga right after this, and then they have international break.
They got Braga on the first, and then they
okay, the sixth is middle of September. That's not middle of September. To me, that's the early. You know what I mean? Wrong weekend.
The second week of September.
I guess second weekend.
Epa, for this.
Second weekend. Second weekend.
Tá bem,
it threw me off.
Okay.
Because to me, six is the beginning. It's not the middle.
You're right.
Middle is like
the 14th is when Benfica gets back into the league again.
That's the middle.
I guess you could say the 14th could be technically the middle.
The
28 day month.
Yeah, exactly. It's the middle. All right, let's say 15 then. No, the next day,
but I think it will be important for Benfica to get this result as well as for Porto. I think that it's going to be interesting because I think that this is usually not your typical scenario in terms, as I mentioned, Porto having to come to Stadio Luz and having to win.
We saw it 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
I think we were there, right? 3 years ago against Porto at Stade de Luz, we were there. And that was the new. Jonas scored.
Jonas scored a PK.
No, 4 years ago, we were there because Sergio Espírito Santo was still the coach. Sergio Espírito Santo.
Bro, that was 3 years ago.
No, 4 years ago.
That was 3 years ago.
Okay, that's the game that we were at.
That's what I'm talking about.
And he played way too conservative at Stade de Luz. And they ended up losing the league as a result of them playing too conservative.
Then it was whatever. Listen, it was.
They looked that up.
It was the first year of Iker Casillas at Benfica at Porto, where we all anticipated. And I'm sitting, and Benfica's going to win 3-0 easily. And he had the game of, I don't want to say his life, because the goalkeeper has won many, many, many important big games in his life. But he had a tremendous game, and I think Benfica tied 1-1, if I'm not mistaken. Benfica.
When did we go with your brother to Portugal?
That was 1-1. That was the
right,
goal.
But
that
that's the
1-1.
That was 2 years.
Because then the following year was Herrera's goal. We lost the team.
Moxie scored at Stade de Luz, and Jonas scored in the penalty.
Yeah.
That's when we went. But the year before that was the game, Dave, you look it up, Iker Casillas' first year at Porto. He had a game that, like, wow, it goes right up there with one of the best games of his career, where Benfica just created chance after chance after chance, and they couldn't get past him. Yeah. And I think they tied 1-1, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but
it was 1-1, yes.
I wanted to say was that these are definitely different circumstances in which both teams come into this.
What a difference is that right now it's the early stages of the campaign, and you can't fall behind 6 points because it's going to be hard to climb back in a title race. And again, it's really early in the season, and it's going to break down, you know, your faith. It's going to confidence-wise, it's going to be terrible. Will your fans give up on you after just getting slapped around by Kronospor or whatever the hell they're called? This is a huge game for Porto not to lose their fans. Whatever.
Krasnodar. <He's,
laughs> He might have said it right in Russian.
It's possible.
Whatever,
you
bro.
Look like a little bit of Russian.
It sounded right in my mind. But, you know, they can't afford to fall behind. So, falling behind 6 points for them is devastating. It's catastrophic.
When you already gave up one of the head-to-head games, right? Because usually we fall behind, but then you get to play them. Your destiny is still in your hands. But now you kind of gave that up if you lose that game.
Yeah, well, that's part of the falling behind by 6 points is losing to the opposition.
Yeah, but you can fall behind by playing Bolognese, by playing Pasadena, by playing Juli Sins.
I'm talking about this is a huge game between the two of them. You can't afford among the reasons, that one, because then Benfica will have the tiebreaker. You saw last year when Benfica won the game at the Luz, then they go into the Dragão, and obviously Benfica needed to win the game to overtake them in the Campeonato, in the standings. But at the end of the day, a result would have suited them because had things been even at the end of the season, Benfica would have had the tiebreaker. So but right now it's a little bit different because right now we're talking about points, which is, you know, 6-point deficit for them with the disastrous start to the season, losing it to Granada, then losing to
Granada. The name changes every time.
Granada, he's talking about the island.
No, Granada.
Krasnodar.
Whatever.
O Porto criou dinheiro, but o Krasnodar.
Krasnodar. But I can't even follow that no more, man. I give up.
Anyway, Dave, some thoughts on the game and a prediction from you.
I said 5-0. Let's go. We're going to win. Big game here. But it's still going to be early in the season, boys. We have 6 points, but it's still lots of season to go. So let's not get too ahead of ourselves here.
Absolutely. Cristiano?
I said 2-0.
You said 2-0. I'm going to go with a 3-1.
For who?
For Benfica.
I'm joking, man.
E tu? Eu já sei 2-2.
E
tu, Bruno?
Why you take the headphones to talk?
So 5-0 for you and 5-0 for Dave. And you say 2-1.
0.
2-0. 3-1, 2-2.
Vamos ver. Quem ganhou
o Vamos ver.
Quem apanha a faba, paga.
So anyway, we'll see. Don't forget to tune in Benfica TV at 7 p.m. local. That is 2 o'clock if you're on the Eastern Standard Time Zone here in the United States. And also in Toronto, if you're in the West Coast, that's -3.
Very good.
What time is -3 from 2 o'clock?
You know, 11. No, just good luck.
Tens razão. Anyway, just one last thing that I wanted to mention before we depart and we talk a little bit more to John. Servis, Vilar, Fesa, Zivkovic, all issues that need to be resolved in one way, shape, or another before the month is out.
They're all in the red light district right now.
Cristiano,
what, come in and buy
what are your thoughts, man? I know you haven't been a huge fan of Servi for quite some time.
Forever.
So you're good with that. Svilar, we always thought that the best thing for Svilar right now is not to hinder
he needs to get out of Portugal, because after his performance...
He played for the B team. They allowed four goals.
And he was atrocious. So he needs to get out of Portugal, because just... giving him a new scenery, right? It hasn't helped him out. So he needs to get out where he doesn't have that huge pressure of no, it's 4-0. He lost the game 4. He played,
was I think, 4-1. 3-0?
4-0, I think. He lost 4-0.
I thought it was 4-1 against Villafranquense, well, who scored, just got promoted to
they
second.
Might be, they might have scored 3-1. One late then, but it was. I know it was 4-0 at some point.
Acompanhaste?
Claro, man. Eu com as modalidades todas do Benfica, but...
Tá bom.
4-0.
Four nothing. Oh,
David,
there you go.
David, when I talk, am I ever wrong?
You just
said... you're Oliveira.
I said 4.
He said 3.
I said three. I thought it was 3.
Anyway.
Svilar needs to go.
Yeah.
Next guy.
Fesa.
Fesa's sad to see him go because he gave us so much. When this guy was healthy, he was a huge part of that of those couple Rui Vitória winning teams. He's a tremendous player, but his time has passed. He needs to go find greener pastures. Just he doesn't make any sense right now because we have so many other options.
I agree with him.
And youngsters as well.
I'm just thinking that a guy like Fesa, and nobody's taking away the quality and what he brings on the field, but the fact that he's been so injury prone, he's had so many issues with injuries, a lot of teams at this age are kind of passing.
They're scared to touch him. And he just doesn't fit into this Bruno Lage team. He doesn't fit into his system. He just doesn't. He's not the caliber of player that Lage wants. He wants a guy that could get a little bit more involved. It's, you know, and some of the criticism I have for Florentino, but Florentino, there's enough of it. And again, if you got a player who's 19, turned 19 today, right? If I'm not mistaken,
Florentino.
Yeah, it was
a couple days ago. Maybe
today. Yesterday. Today. Or yeah, whatever. Who cares? We say today that people believe it. Because I was I'm never wrong. I said
we
4-0.
Say today that people believe
it. I said 4-0. It could be today, whenever they're listening to it. It could be today. And maybe they'll listen to this next year, you know, at the time of his birthday. But so when they have a younger option, you know, they're going to play the youngsters. So, again, many thanks for what you've done. Besides, we're Benfica, pa. You know, we need to turn the page. We can't have you around just because you were great for us a couple of years ago. It's just
there's no sentimental value.
You can't have sentimental value when it comes to this if you want to be at the top and be the very best at what you do.
Yeah, and then the other guy was Zivkovic, which
that guy is a little surprised, a little sad to see him go. But again, as big of a fan of his as I've been over the years,
it's a head scratcher.
It's not a head scratcher. I think at some point you have to look at things the way they really are. And it's like the guy's been through three different coaches and he just hasn't been able to stick. So maybe it's a he thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, it's time it sucks. It sucks because he has the ability and the quality to be a fantastic player. And it's, you know, and I expect it. He's going to leave and he's going to be a good player for somebody. He's going to be a really good player for somebody.
It's a shame because at one point he was touted as one of the upcoming and emergent young Serbian players that was going to be their future. And really his future has kind of smoked out. He's had some opportunities. He plays well. But as Cristiano mentioned, this is a heat thing, really, I think, because as you mentioned, three coaches can't all have the same, can't all be wrong about the guy unless there's something wrong with him. What are your take on Zivkovic, man? You've seen him. He's been around. What do you think, Sean?
No, I think you just brought up a good point. He's already been seen by enough managers. They see him train every day. And I think all these players that you've discussed, you know, usually a lot of players get loaned out to the championship teams in England, sometimes some smaller teams in Spain. But Feja, I think, has got a market in Turkey, but they haven't managed to come to an agreement yet. I think he has, but Benfica hasn't come. I think Benfica wants $3 million for Feja.
So he doesn't have a market then?
Well, it seems like. Well, let me just say, it seems like if you guys know your footballing history, Turkey wants everybody in Portugal, it seems. Seems like no more team country that's mentioned more with wanting players in Portugal than Turkey, even more than England. So, yeah, it would be curious to see what's going to happen with these guys. But they've obviously got to move them because I don't think they're going to help your B team either.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. Dave, well, any thoughts on losing some of these guys, sentimental value? What are your thoughts on these guys that apparently are on the window?
Yeah, these guys, like we've mentioned, they've done their time, won championships with us, but there's currently no spots on the roster for these guys. So I'm surprised with Zivkovic that he's still here because he has that clause in his contract that his contract or his wages double after every passing season. So really surprised that he's still even here with the club with that clause in his contract.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's all we got. I just wanted to ask you, John, what is the future hold for Portuguese? I know that you just recently started doing a podcast.
Yep.
What is the future for PortugueseSoccer.com, man?
Just keep doing it. Just like you, you know, hopefully with our podcast, I put up as many years as you've had and just continue to report the news and continue to get more followers. And I'm very excited about this podcast. I think of all the things I do, this is by far, because now I can talk about my opinions. I can be out open about it. The Twitter, the Facebook, the website and all the other stuff is.
You're still being unbiased on the podcast, right?
Well, I will be, but in certain situations. If I feel whether it's a situation that I think it's right for Benfica or right for Porto, I'm going to say it. But I think anybody who listens to it over the course of time will see that, you know, I'm pretty much speaking my mind. And, you know, I've been on the Benfica podcast now, so I'm sure everybody that's Porto or Sporting thinks I'm a Benfica fan. So I've sort of ruined already. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I love what I do, just like you guys love what you do. And just like the people that are listening love what they do with following the league and just keep on plugging along. Keep just doing what I do because it's a fun hobby. It's a fun hobby to do because that's really what it is. It's a hobby.
Yeah. Where can people find you on out there? Social media?
Yeah, I mean, I've a website, of course, PortugueseSoccer.com. If you don't know how to spell Portuguese, PSoccer.com.
Portuguese.
So you'd be surprised how many people. And then obviously Twitter, PSoccer.com. Same thing for the Facebook. And I've been doing an Instagram thing. Which has really taken off. That's where I get a lot of comments about a lot of different things. And I just started a fantasy thing, and that's at Portuguese_soccer_noticia. So I'll look to have you on in the future if I could figure out some of my problems with the podcast. And like I said, it's I'm having a lot of fun, and I want to continue to have a lot of fun.
Where can people find the podcast?
They'll find it on the website. It's obviously going to also be tweeted out. Usually I have it, you know, kind of pinned at the top of the page. Okay. And if you go to the website, it's one of the things at the top. So much.
And also available on Anchor FM.
Last time I checked, Anchor, iTunes, Google, I just put it up on SoundCloud.
Spotify.
So there's a few other podcasts at Anchor FM. I don't know.
Is it a weekly thing?
My plan right now is to do a weekly. I like it to be, you know, I'm going to have guests on, but a lot of times I like to talk about what I think. And I've gotten a lot of positive remarks. I think people, when they come on the show, see things from a different perspective. I really do try to be down the middle. I know in Portugal, everybody has a certain bias. But I would say that the biggest compliment that I've had is I think people enjoy that. I think when they come on, not everybody, but, you know, I think there's a fair majority that are going to hear something down the middle. And, you know, when I watch the Clásico this weekend, if I think something's a PK, I'm going to say if it's a PK or not without regard to whatever criticism I'm going to get. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing in the podcast. And every once in a while, I'm going to have a guest. But I like to do like a Bill Simmons format. Most of the time, do all the talking, invite some guests. And it's not going to be necessarily talking about week-to-week Liga stuff. It's going to be about topics. You know, what's going on in Portugal with these 21-30 times? You know, I don't know if you know, a lot of games now are at 9:30. Can you imagine the Red Bulls playing a game at 9:30 at night?
I think on Sundays they're tough. During the weekend, that could just be how you start your night. And then you continue, go to the club. Yeah. But, you know, it's not for everyone.
but thank you for having me on. I've been listening to you guys for a few years.
Only listen a couple of times. Come on, you can be
honest. No, I have. I've been listening. I think the first podcast I listened to was Chris. You might remember this. You guys were playing Gil Vicente, and people from Gil Vicente were complaining about the ticket prices. And Chris comes out and says, look, if you can't afford the tickets, then do me a favor, eat. Don't remember that?
That was a classic one.
I remember that. That was like the early days when I started to, you know, listen to. But I do listen to a lot of podcasts. Obviously, not always the time. I'm an Arsenal fan. I love watching AFTV. But I do follow as much as I can Portugal, and I try to see as many opinions as possible. You'd be surprised sometimes how much you learn listening to somebody else talk about Portugal. Yeah.
No, excellent. Thank you for accepting our invitation. As John mentioned, make sure you follow him on all the social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also his website. You can find Cristiano on Twitter at 10CO10, Dave at DO87DO, at Benfica Podcast is where you can find us. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. Don't forget to check that out. There'll be some pictures that we'll post. Promised that we're going to be a little bit more active on that Instagram thing. So anyway, my name is Alfredo. I've been here with Cristiano Oliveira and David de Oliveira and our guest, João Neves. And Bruno's been in the background working things. I don't know what. But anyway, next week we'll be back. We'll recap the Porto game and we'll look ahead to Benfica's next game, which is going to be at the Pedreira against Braga. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your week and enjoy yourselves and be good to each other. Later.